Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
And what Jay just said there earlier this morning, that's what Jazz fans are going to be thinking all off season. So a doozy, I know you guys love when I say that, a doozy game seven.
A doozy.
Between the Jazz and the Nuggets. But in the Western Conference, we're not done with game sevens. Rockets, Thunder, 9 Eastern tonight on ESPN. Heat and Bucks will whet your appetite at 6:30 Eastern. So if you're an NBA fan, ESPN is the spot tonight. Keyshawn, J. Will, Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests, including Doris Burke, who will join us at 8:10 a.m. Eastern, and Charles Barkley at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. All right, so the Nuggets get it done 80-78. Now an opportunity, Jay, for James Harden to get it done. This is game seven. This is against his old squad. There's a ton of people that think Harden just is out there scoring a ton of points, and that's great. And nobody doubts his individual talents, but this is a big spot in round number one for one of the greatest players of his era.
I think James Harden's legacy of winning, having a chance to win a championship, is on the line here. And look, his legacy is cemented as one of the most gifted, innovative scorers we've ever seen in the history of the game. Like, he's proven that, right? Multiple scoring titles, MVP. He's incredible. But at the end of the day, we evaluate teams or players on how many championships have you won, right? It's things that have haunted players in the past.
Ask Charles about that.
We probably will, right? Right. And I think when you look at James Harden, the way things went down last game with Russell Westbrook taking the last couple of shots, those last couple of possessions, me as a basketball player recognizing that, and Key and I talk about this, is I think we were both alphas when we were on the court. And James is an alpha in a way, but I felt like at times James becomes passive around Russell Westbrook. Now, I thought it had to do with coaching. It did. Like, I really think that at that time you needed the head coach to say, hey, give the ball to James Harden. But also, he's not the only one at fault. James Harden needed to say to Russ, give me the ball, Russ. Give me the ball. So I think tonight, if we have OKC, I'll ask you this, Key. Would it shock anybody here if we woke up tomorrow morning, if you didn't watch the game, and the headline was OKC wins game seven? Would that shock you?
I wouldn't be shocked at all.
Isn't that a problem? Isn't that a problem when you're thinking about multiple MVP winners on the same team having a chance to win a championship with the Houston Rockets with the style in which they play?
Well, when they got Westbrook, the first thing people said, can they coexist? Two ball dominant players. Can they coexist? We saw what happened with CP3 and Harden, right? They had Golden State in the headlock, and then when CP3 got hurt, it kind of got away from him a couple years ago.
But he got hurt.
Yeah, but he got hurt. It got away from him a couple years ago. The marriage ended. They moved on. Sent him to OKC. Now when you look at it, you say to yourself, what is James Harden? Where's that legacy? If you don't win a championship or you don't put yourself in a championship position, people are going to look at you as a regular season scoring champion, and that's pretty much it, an MVP. So you don't ever want to be known just based on statistics. That's why always when we talk about winning championships, man, it was so damn important for me to win a Super Bowl. It was so important. It was important not only to win the Super Bowl, but be an important part of winning the Super Bowl to make sure that I had a great season, all of those sort of things. So when you look at it, yeah, our defense was dominant, but I played a very important role because that's important to be able to have a championship. I don't care about all them Pro Bowls and playoff appearances and can I finish the deal with a ring on? Because it's like a degree. Nobody could take that away from you. And when you win a championship, nobody could take that away from you. They could talk about the regular season and your champion and regular season and your MVP and comeback player of the year. But it's different when you got that ring on your finger.
Facts. And I think the narrative that Facts is correct. And I think the narrative then becomes, if they lose game seven to Chris Paul, what kind of player does James Harden need to play with that can actually help him do that? It's not an alpha. It's not an alpha, right? Look at the last 2 years.
Right.
Look at the last 2 years. CP3 was an alpha. That was the problem. Russell Westbrook, an alpha. James Harden didn't take the last two. I don't know if James Harden is an alpha all the way.
Yeah,
James Harden is an alpha in the way he scores, but I don't know if he's a demonstrative mentality of an alpha. Give me the damn ball, alpha. That's Russell Westbrook.
I think he is that give me the damn ball alpha. I think he is. I've seen times where he's just basically in the game, took it and took the shot. You said what type of player would he need to play with? It's not who he needs to play with. It's him playing a certain way. If you go back to his days at OKC, when it was him, KD, Perk, and obviously in Harden, when you look at that, he wasn't the main focal point. He was kind of a guy within with a bunch of guys. That's what he needs to be able to do, is get with a team that got a couple guys that will allow him to do what he needs to do, but not try and do too much.
So, yeah, you know what? You're maybe right. So maybe we need to, if this happens, then I think you have to start resetting expectations.
Yes.
For James Harden.
Like, I don't need James Harden to score 40 points every night.
We're not going
to
win that way.
We're not going to win that way.
Wow. So then the conversation becomes, is James Harden our second best player? Our third best player to win a championship?
Man, that's okay. There's nothing wrong.
But, you know, people will go crazy with a guy who can score 45, 50, one of the most gifted scorers we've ever seen in history. That's like saying.
But that's okay,
but like AI, if we're saying AI, become a second option. AI won a championship being that guy.
What championship?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't. You're right. He went to the championship. I think he went to the finals.
And like stepped I said, over Ty
I'm on a lack of sleep. I'm out here. I'm struggling. Mickey, cut me.
No, it's all good. It's all good. We make mistakes and we correct them. That's what we do. But if you think about it, though, Z,
yeah.
And you go back to his OKC days, the way that they style in which they play, that's what he needs, not the D'Antoni system that allows you just to jack up threes all day long. No, you don't. No, it's not going to work with him. You can't do it. It has been proven that is not the way to win a championship.
Could be the final game for Mike D'Antoni as well. He's 69 years old. His contract is up. There's been a lot of discussion around him. Keyshawn J. Will Zubin presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Doris Burke is 3 minutes away. Tim Legler echoes exactly what Jay Will said. He said this on Mike Greenberg's radio show Greeny yesterday. Essentially, the burden on the beard is heavy.
Till he gets them all the way, and I mean talking about 2A finals, he's going to continue to deal with this every time his teams come up short in the postseason. So I think a lot of it's going to fall at his feet. He has to have a big-time performance. When you put your offense, Greeny, that much in one player's hands, the way that they do, it's unprecedented in NBA history, the way they operate their offense around one player. Well, then you need to come through with a huge performance when your team has to have it. So it's going to fall in large part at his feet. And I think, obviously, with Mike D'Antoni not having a new contract, I think that would lead to a coaching change as well. So there's going to be some definite changes the way you look at everything, and there's no question Harden can't escape this if they don't win this game.
I mean, Jay, I think that is put super well from the standpoint of, yeah, usage, all the nerds, the numbers guys, they love the usage rate at the end of the day. But, Key, you're talking just, what are my eyes showing me? Right?
Yeah,
what are my eyes showing me? It
shows you that he gets a lot of shots up, he scores a lot of points, but at the end, they can't finish. And you can't win that way long-term in the NBA. I didn't play in the NBA, but I'm not a damn fool. I know what I'm seeing.
Right.
I know sports. And when you think about it, whether it was the great Phoenix Sun teams of Steve Nash.
With D'Antoni, by the way.
D'Antoni.
Right.
Or whether,
point that out.
Whether he was out in L.A. when he was coaching with us and yeah. couldn't figure it out, or whether it's here in Houston, or whether it was with the Knicks. You're going to always be at the top of the leaderboard in scoring, but at the end, you can't finish the deal. And I know CP3 had him in the position a couple years ago, and he got hurt, and it kind of just disappeared. But you got two guys and MVPs, like you said, Jay, and Russell Westbrook as well as Harden, that are high-octane scoring machines. You can't have that without having some sort of plan in place when that doesn't go the way you envision it to go, and they do not have another plan in place.
You're all or nothing. That's what you
That's
are.
That's it.
You're all or nothing.
There's no adjustment.
The scary part about all of this, though, Zubin,
yes.
is that we still haven't seen the all yet. We haven't seen the all yet. We haven't seen both Russell Westbrook and James Harden get hot. And as an avid, diehard basketball fan, as a fan of sports, there ain't nothing better when you have two high-caliber players that get hot at the same time. If that were to happen, because, look, 2020, you had to expect the unexpected.
But if
that were to happen, that would be – I would give them a chance to beat the Lakers if that were to happen, if they got hot at the same time. if they got hot. They had to be extremely hot. But here's the thing. You're always on the edge of your seat waiting for it to happen because of the potential of it happening.
But you got to also take it in consideration. When one of them get hot, they going to stay hot and not share the rock.
That's not necessarily true.
That's part of the problem. No, man, that's part of the problem.
That's not necessarily true.
You know, Brooke going to try to go for 60 if he at 35.
I hear you. But
and Harden is at 35. He going to try to go for 100.
But there have been games and both those guys have had 35, 40 points, like where it just everybody else gets in where they fit in. Like, that's what you have all the ancillary pieces but around them for.
But has that been in a situation in a game seven where all that pressure is on you now?
No, but I'm saying, once again, the mentality is, look, survive in advance. My thing is, you need to get to a new day in order to see what that new day brings you, but you need to get to that new day first. You need a big-time game from James Harden tonight and Russell Westbrook to get by on game seven in order to get to a new day with the Lakers.
Think about Brooke in game, was it five? Game five with the last shot? Was it five?
Brody, you mean game six?
It was game six. Okay. Yeah. Think about Westbrook. I mean, he shot the ball. He didn't give it up. He decided he was going to take the last couple shots.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. When you got that type of mentality, you it's hard to change your mentality.
But that's Mike D'Antoni's problem though. That's why he needs to be that person that is demonstrative, that actually specifies who you give the ball to at the end of a game.
Has he ever done that?
No, but that's the problem.
If you can't, and my whole point is you're not going to change. You're not just going to all of a sudden change your philosophy and your thought process and your style because your system you believe works and it's in place to win championships, even though you've never won a championship with it. But you just won't change. And that's D'Antoni.
Let's get Doris's opinion on this because she always gives it right down the line.
Yeah, she's 20 seconds away. It's the 25th anniversary, by the way, of the Rockets' last championship. Keyshawn, J. Will Zubin reminding you to check out ESPN Audio at Home by telling Alexa to play news from ESPN. ESPN Audio at Home is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes from customization and service to financial assistance. Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. And we are ready for Doris Burke. Hey, DB, good morning. That's her Twitter feed. We were talking about this morning, Doris. I know you're on the call for the Raptors and the Celtics. I called Brad Stevens the Kawhi of coaches. He's quiet. You don't hear from him. He's not demonstrative, but boy, is he effective. You were on the call last night. Take us inside why he has been so successful with this particular group.
Well, I just want to go to your first point, if it's okay, Zubin, because it's fascinating. You just said that about his temperament, and I'd love to hear what Keyshawn and Jay Will think about this, because Dave Pasch and I, off camera, in between quarters, we were talking about this, and sort of, you know, Jay, there's always this talk about a coach in the NBA has a window in which that, you know, if you're not Pop or Rick Carlisle or one of these guys whose tenure is so long, that there's a window and then your voice starts to not resonate a little bit. I think because of Brad's temperament, because he doesn't seem to get too high or too low. He's never a screamer. Like, he's always going to make his point. I've been in his training camps. Like, there's this evenness in the way he addresses these men that I think can help his tenure. So let me just throw that back at the guys. Do you think his tenure could be sort of like a Pop because of that?
I do. I think eventually he wins a championship, and we're not even having this conversation, Doris. I think when you look at it, he also has the support of Danny Ainge in the front office. There's, you know, when there's no grumbling going on in the front office, the coach can coach. Plus, players have bought in from day one, right? They like him. You don't hear any complaints about him. They're listening to him. Because when you believe a coach, as you know, you'll run through a wall for him. And I think that's what we're seeing in Boston, Jay.
And then, Doris, I would throw this back to you. I think after watching how turbulent the road was a couple years ago with Kyrie, and then seeing them grow through that, those relationships, bringing Kimba in, watching Brad Stevens manage that, it had to be difficult because the outside pressure on that relationship and how he dealt with that, I thought was critical. And I give him a lot of credit for managing that. That was challenging for him. And I think players have bought into him for how he managed that.
And I think your point is valid. Like, he's a guy who's always going to do a level of self-examination. You know, where can I get better? What are my failings? Where have I fallen short? And I'm sure he looked at that relationship with Kyrie and every guy on that team and how he managed each one of those, because that ecosystem obviously is constantly changing. And just to Keyshawn's point about, you know, no grumbling. So at the center spot, which has been the one question hovering over whether they're championship caliber, look at what he does. You know, Cantor is critical in the last series. He basically, in the eight seeding games, splits the minutes at center between Cantor and Williams because he knew he might need each in a different series. And so Robert Williams is perfect, right? He goes for 10 in the first quarter. They had to endure what they knew was coming, which was Toronto was going to throw the first punch last night. I just think, you know, his handling of the players and Cantor being so genuinely enthused for the success of his team and Robert Williams is telling. And, you know, I'm curious. I think what you've done is you forced Toronto to execute in half court. They are nowhere near as lethal. You've helped them twice now with a high number of turnovers, and they paid a little bit more last night, but not as much as required. And though I know this team has a championship pedigree and they've been down 0-2 before, it feels different than a season ago to me, guys.
DB, let me take you over to the game tonight, 6:30 on ESPN Network, the Heat versus the Bucks. The other day, Giannis was asked by a reporter, how come you didn't guard Jimmy Butler? And I think you know his response. His response was, because, well, coach didn't tell me to. What do you take of that? I mean, obviously, that's not the only reason they lost that game. But ultimately, of Giannis and the mentality and answering that question, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I'm not going to go down that route only for this reason, okay? You know, number one, I believe he should have probably said, I'm going to guard him, right? Or coach, just, I want that guy. Can I have him for the next, you know, 5 minutes of this? Okay, that's absolutely 100% agree with that. But in no way am I going to question this guy's competitive fire. I think his nature is, and his belief in Bud is so fundamental and so pure that it wouldn't cross his mind to maybe challenge, you know, the matchup in the moment. Now, in the aftermath of this and the chatter and everything else, well, now it's brought to his attention. And I'll be very curious to see, do those matchups change, particularly in those moments, right? It go back to when LeBron James wins the battle against Kawhi finally before the season shutdown and the battle against Milwaukee, and he goes and seeks out those two stars because he's like, okay, it's my time. I have to do this. You know, whether they score on me or not, it's my responsibility. I just wonder if that wasn't a sign, and I've not spoken to Giannis, I'm not close enough to have this kind of conversation because my level is different here in the bubble. It would be something I would ask him directly, like, did it cross your mind, oh, I should do that? You know, now that you've had a chance to think about it, how different do you think about it? Like, I'm going to give the guy a little bit of a runway here just because I know how competitive he is individually. So was it a mistake in that game? Unequivocally. But I think moving forward, you know, that probably changes now.
Doris Burke is joining us here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Let me ask you about tonight's game, OKC against Houston. And for whatever reason or however it may unfold, CP3 takes care of business. We wake up tomorrow, OKC is in, moving on, and James Harden, Westbrook, and D'Antoni are packing their bags. What's the narrative that would be set about those guys in Houston?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a great question, number one. I would say fundamentally, like, I in no way put what happened at the end of the last game on James Harden's shoulders. You know, Russell, I thought, struggled throughout the course of the game. The turnovers, they run that particular action, Keyshawn, where Russell starts with the ball. He sort of gets himself to the elbow and throws it back to James. That never materialized. And to me, that's on Russell. Like, hold your dribble, get it back out, and, you know, find a way. And you know Russell is beating himself up in the aftermath of that game, and he'll come back like a house of fire tonight. This will be interesting because I think the long view of history will view Mike D'Antoni as revolutionary. He fell short in Phoenix. If not for a Robert Horry hip check and the ensuing, you know, sort of fracas that develops, do they win a title that year? If Chris Paul doesn't pull his hamstring in that series, And this is the fine line between winning or losing. But when I talk to coaches, Keyshawn, they say this man was revolutionary to the game. So is the long view of history that, or the lack of success in his particular spots, like the system only worked so hard? So I don't know the answer to those questions. I think it's obviously something up for long and strong and a passionate debate amongst fan bases. And I'm just going to say this about Chris Paul. You know, all they do is they hang around long enough for the maestro to take over. His ability to get to that pull-up game, his ability to manipulate the game, the little shot he took in the post-game interview, some guys are built for that. You know, he's trying to get in their heads after game six for game seven. Like, the guy, he makes me laugh. He's a joy to watch play, and you have to admire the competitive spirit.
DB, what does that say about CP3? Not only has he taken OKC to game seven, he's one of the leaders in the NBA. This team is one of the leaders in the NBA in clutch points. He's handled a boycott, essentially. He's been on the phone late night with LeBron James, with Barack Obama. He's had so much on his shoulders, but he still plays at such a high level.
Yeah, listen, you know, obviously I feel, you know, quite lucky to do what I do, to watch these men, you know, hone their craft and do all these things. And Chris Paul in particular, I've been covering him since he was at Wake Forest, you know, going against your Dukies, which were always incredible matchups. You know, he's always been a leader. I think he's always been somebody who's been unafraid to challenge teammates, to challenge coaches, and now to challenge society. And the fact of the matter is, very little change happens without somebody directly standing in front of you and wanting confrontation. And, you know, I'll go to Jimmy Butler for a cross comparison. You know, Joel Embiid tweets out, hadn't tweeted in months, and after he watches Jimmy Butler close the Miami game, he tweets twice. Like, when you have a Chris Paul or a Jimmy Butler or a LeBron James, those guys, and Kevin Durant, and it goes to something Steve Kerr said about Kevin Durant. Like, there's a handful of guys who can do these things. And it's, you know, we're watching the best in the world do what they do, and yet there's this cream of the crop level. Like, for 10 years, Chris Paul was the best point guard in the NBA. Is he the best point guard in the NBA? No. But you know what he does? He fights on the margins for every inch and millimeter because he knows he's on the back nine of his career. Shoot, he's almost to the 19th tee at this point. But, like, he's still fighting for the margins. He's trying to get better. And look where he's got his team. It's really something special, and we should appreciate it, Jay Will.
Oh, so well said, DB. Great. So well said. Doris will be on the call tonight from Miami, Milwaukee, again, 6:30 Eastern on ESPN. And then the big one, 9 o'clock Eastern, Game 7, Thunder Rockets. Doris was brought to you by the new Ford Super Duty, built Ford Tough. Doris, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, DB.
More NBA chatter with Charles Barkley on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line at 9:30 a.m. Eastern.
Doris is so good.
The best.
It's so good. Just her ability to articulate people and their emotions and what they're thinking in those moments.
No doubt. We'll see her tonight on the call again. Still to come, Russell Wilson ranked ahead of Aaron Rodgers on our ESPN Top 100 NFL Players list for 2020. Had Key all fired up. But what does our resident quarterback guru think? The guy that played the position. Yeah. Is he on board with Key? We'll see.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Key, we're going to talk straight with one of your NFL Live partners, Dan Orlovsky, here in just 1 second on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mm-hmm. But to recap our earlier conversation, NFL Top 100 list is out. 100 players ranked by our 46 analysts on exactly who will be best performer in the NFL this coming season. Russell Wilson is at 4. Aaron Rodgers finds himself outside of the top 20, and that's your biggest burn.
Yeah, it really is, and there's nothing against Russell. I like Russell Wilson as a player. I'd take him in a heartbeat. I would love to have played with him. But Aaron Rodgers at that position is just different. And I know people say, well, he hadn't won a championship in a long time, and his team struggled. And man, that dude was in the NFC Championship game with us as his receivers. And I'll say that till the cows come home. Jay was on one outside, you was in the slot, and I was on the other side. That's who he was throwing to, a bunch of broke-down players outside of Devontae Adams. And so when you look at it, now I don't know the parameters of why or how they get to the rankings in the position that they put the players in, but if you asked anybody, and we'll ask Dan this,
yeah,
you taking Russell Wilson over Aaron Rodgers?
Let's bring him in to find out. Dan Orlovsky joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Key's teammate on NFL Live, 4 p.m. Eastern every weekday on ESPN. First, quick, Dan, I probably should have asked you this in the commercial break. Were you one of the 46 that voted in this?
No, I haven't climbed that wall yet to have that distinction. So, no, I did not vote.
So Key's in the same boat there. So what do you think of Key's comment here, Wilson versus Rodgers?
Yeah, I mean, I actually would easily take Russell Wilson over Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, I don't know anybody what he's accomplished and how great he's been, and he's still a really good player. But Russell Wilson's at worst the second best quarterback in football right now. And so, you know, what Aaron has been notorious for is making something out of nothing, and you know, kind of these inexplainable type of plays. We see those routinely out of Russell still. And last year, you know, for everything that went against Seattle, he had them in the divisional round on the road against the Green Bay. And I know Key's point of NFC or the Packers being the NFC title game is like valid. There's a lot of fool's gold there as well. I mean, I think they won like 9 or 10 games by less than 6 points or something like that. You got to win the games. I'm not going to knock them for that, but like, this was a 13-3 team that went 13-3 team. They did not go 13-3 on the backs of their quarterback and his dominant play and their skill position players. So Russell Wilson will have a better season than Aaron. He's got a much better team around him, complementary pieces wise as well.
And that's why you didn't get a vote. Okay. Anyway, let's move along.
Well, neither did you.
No, I'm dead. Yeah, that's true, too. So, Dan, let me ask you this. Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Drew Lock, and Gardner Minshew, which one of these second-year quarterbacks is prime for a big-time sophomore season?
Yeah, it's Kyler Murray for me. And there's something that Kyler Murray can do that will take him on a rocket ship, and he'll be in the running for, you know, fringe MVP or offensive player of the year. They obviously add Hop, right? And so I think the biggest adjustment with him and Hop comes from, you know, DeAndre Hopkins isn't this timing type of receiver. It's not like he's, you know, extraordinary. He's more of like he's never covered. He's such a good contested catch guy. Ball is in the air. He always makes the catch. And it's really like Kyler getting comfortable with that. Like when you often, Key, you know this, like when a quarterback looks at a receiver, it's like, well, is he going to get open? Do I sense separation? That doesn't really matter with Hopkins. You just make sure that you throw it in his vicinity, give him those one-on-one opportunities. That takes time for a quarterback to get comfortable with. I'd say this, Kyler was the most sacked quarterback in football last year, 48 sacks, right? And so as you watch the tape, you go, how many are on the offensive line stinking, and then how many are on the quarterback? 13 times Kyler took a sack last year where he just didn't need to. He just, like, the ball could have gotten out of his hands. There's a receiver open at 4 or 5 yards, just get it out. And just the impact that has on his offense. Lamar took a massive jump. Lamar Jackson, massive jump from year one to year two. In year one, he was sacked 16 times in 160 pass attempts. So one every 10 times Lamar threw the ball, he was sacked. Sacked 23 times in 4 attempts. So like one out of every 19. It's this massive jump that you could take as a quarterback when you realize getting the ball out helps. Last year, Kyler was sacked 48 times, so and 520 attempts, like one out of every 11 attempts. So, like, if he just cleans up those little things with the addition of the talent and his growth in a second year, this kid's going to be MVP conversation. He's going to be that good. And I'd say caveat with, they took a kid out of Houston, Josh Jones, of the offensive line. as a tackle. If he plays really, really, really well, some people thought he was a first-round pick, Cardinals offense is going to be scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dan, you're breaking up a little bit there. I know that Westport service, I have the same thing. I feel you on that. I wanted to ask you, you're the biggest Carson Wentz fan at the company, my man. The biggest one. I hear you talk about it all the time. Dak Prescott is ranked 20th on this ESPN NFL 100 list. Wentz comes in at 39. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Zubin could be ranked 20th for the talent that the Cowboys offer. So, like, listen, I would say this. If Carson Wentz was on the Cowboys this year, he wouldn't be ranked 20th. He'd be ranked in the top 6 or 7 in the NFL. I mean, their offense is loaded. And so any quarterback's going to go and play well. Their Dak will play well. But I'm actually surprised Dak is not ranked higher because the talent that they have. They have, you know, probably a top 3 receiving core. Jarwin's a baller tight end that people don't know about. Their offensive line will be top 5 in the NFL and obviously have a top 3 back. So Carson Wentz is the better player. This is not a discussion. This is not up for debate. This got solved last year. If Dak Prescott loses Amari Cooper, Gallup, and Tyron Smith and Zeke Elliott for some time and leads this team to a division title and accomplishes things historically that haven't been done at the position like Carson Wentz did last year in Philly, then maybe we will revisit. But for right now, this conversation has been closed.
Okay, Dan, if you say so. But let me ask you this question, though. Let's see if you could close this one. The Chiefs obviously gave the big deal to Patrick Mahomes, big money monster deal. Now Deshaun Watson is up for extension. Will he get treated the same in Houston? And if so, should he take it or should he look to go somewhere else?
Oh, that's a great question, Key. I would look to go somewhere else. There's a lot of lack of structure in Houston right now. And I'm sure he loved that organization and loved that city. But you know, ever since the death of Bob McNair, rest his soul, there just haven't been good front office moves there. Bill O'Brien's a good coach, not a great coach, but a good coach. And I would just sit there and go, man, I don't know if I really trust that this organization is going to put me in positions to play well and succeed the way Brett Veach and Andy Reid do and the Hunt family in Kansas City. I will say this about Deshaun Watson. He is absolutely phenomenal. He's actually my sleeper pick for MVP this year. Best offensive line and most cohesive offensive line. He's had 3 big-time receivers that can go vertical. So will he be treated the same way? Houston better because, you know, he's a main reason why they're even in the conversation to win their division and go to the playoffs. He's that spectacular. Like, he's going to be in the breath of Patrick Mahomes for the next dozen years in the NFL. Now, dependent on how they support him will be if he elevates to that level or not, but he's spectacular. So Houston should get the deal done, because don't wait till the end of the season to get the deal done, because he is going to be in the MVP conversation this season.
I'll talk to some people about helping you get that vote.
Man, you and Keyshawn are like fire and ice. You guys are like fire and ice, Dan and Keith. I like this.
Who's better than you?
Yeah, we will see Key, Dan Orlovsky, the whole gang, every weekday afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN for NFL Live. Dan, thank you very much.
All right, Dan, see you this afternoon, man.
Later, guys.
All right, he mentioned Bob McNair, the late owner of the Houston Texans, who has passed away. We'll see what happens with the organization moving forward. Still to come, one of the all-time great intimidators on the court is dancing back into our lives. If you love watching one of the most popular shows on television, that's next.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's roll, and we will start this morning with tennis, the U.S. Open. It is day three in Flushing, Queens, not too far from where we are at the South Street Seaport Studios in Lower Manhattan. We're going to start with Serena defeating Christiane in straight sets, 7-5, 6-3 in her first round match. An was a round of 16 player last year, so she's a very good young talent. Williams, 102nd victory at this major, breaking a tie with our Chris Evert for the most U.S. Open wins by a woman in the open air. She's looking for that elusive next Grand Slam, which would put her in company with Margaret Court and the all-time list at the very top.
I think this is the year, Z, for her. No fans, all the intensity. She could just deal with it herself and get that intensity going without the fans. I think it's going to be perfect.
And it's awesome for tennis fans. No Wimbledon this year, but at least you got the U.S. Open every single point streaming somewhere on the ESPN networks. Nuggets and Jazz, whew, last night on ABC. What an ending. In the final seconds, Mike Conley could have hit a three to end the game and end the series and give it to Utah in seven, but instead it rims out. Denver overcomes the 3-1 deficit for the first time in franchise history. It's only been done a dozen times in playoff history, period. They'll move on. They got the Clippers in game one of the Western Conference semifinals. Jokic, Murray, PG, Kawhi.
Yeah, I was going to say last night you felt like when Utah was charging back, what would the energy in the building have been like in Utah if they were playing that game at home, game seven, what the series would have been? You just think, you know, if you had the energy of the crowd, it might have been a different scenario.
Right, but for the next 40 days, we're going to have an NBA champion here in 40 days. It's going to be tough to just watch it without fans.
Or Denver. Game would have been at Denver, actually.
Yeah, right, with the seating there, Denver with the 2-seed, 3-seed. So we'll see what happens, but both passionate fan bases. Dancing with the Stars, speaking of passionate fan bases, you can't be on TV this long without ever changing your format and be this successful. Dancing with the Stars is back September 14th on ABC. This season, we've got Nelly. By the way, Nelly's 45 now, if you want to feel old. NBA okay. Great Charles Barkley.
No, Charles Oakley.
Excuse me, Oakley.
Barkley will be on with us.
At 9:30. Excuse me.
Barkley would be great on there too, though, by the way.
He would. Super Bowl champion Vernon Davis. Tiger King star Carole Baskin. I need a little bit of a lesson on that. We've also got the figure skater Johnny Weir. You always see him now commentating during the Olympics. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that one of us three has personal experience on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Key, take us
dance.
Back. Take us a trip down memory
so
lane.
Hollywood sometimes.
Turn on ESPN News if you're
it
here. Turn
fun,
on ESPN
man.
News
it
right
was,
now.
You know,
look
it
at
was,
you
it
with the
fun.
Collar popped.
No, it was fun. It was.
There he is.
You know, it was one of those experiences that you just step out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And you try to.
Woo! That's a moves that way.
ESPN News.
Hey. It was so, you know, it was just one of those deals. You're a little uncomfortable, but I was able to get it in, but you know, the interesting thing is I was the first one voted off, right? And usually when you're the first one voted off, that's because you're bad.
Right.
But this, you know, Dancing with the Stars is really geared in terms of voting and stuff like that is social media. And at this particular time, I wasn't a social media. I'm not a social media guy now. And so people that were there had big social media followings. Plus, not only that, they put me on there with about six professional dancers mm-hmm. that had professional dance experience.
Right.
Whether it was mm-hmm. Christina Milian, who's a R&B singer who dances in videos,
right.
Or Corbin Blue, or who else was on there? The Amber from Glee, who actually wind up winning. So I'm up there with all these dancers.
It sounds like a lot of excuses to me.
No, man, it just look, man. I'm up there with all these dancers. I had fun though. It was a lot of work.
What was the practices like? I've heard they're
exactly.
Just
exactly. That's what I want to know. It was you were working at ESPN at the time.
I was
correct? Working
at ESPN. So I would at the time when we first started, I was in Hawaii on vacation. So they sent my partner to Hawaii to interrupt my vacation to dance. So I would practice probably 6 hours a day.
Wow.
Six hours a day.
And so when I come to the city, go to Bristol, I would get in on Saturday. I would have practice on Saturday, do the show on Sunday, then practice again on Monday before the Monday night show, fly home to L.A.
What?
Tuesday. Yeah.
That sounds like too much work.
It was a lot. It was a lot of work, but it was fun, man. You get to experience something that otherwise I wouldn't. You think I'm going to sign up for dancing? And it took me forever to do it because they have been asking me for like ever. You want to do it? I'm like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to do it.
So what eventually they went to your agent? What turned the tide for you?
I got tired of him asking.
Hold on, Keith. Hold on. I'm not going to let Zubin keep asking you questions.
What's going on?
He's never watched Tiger King.
Yeah, this is true.
What do you mean?
So I had to roll through Carol Baskin like I knew who she was, but I have no idea who she is.
So how do you – okay, so first of all, we are in a major pandemic in the middle of the spring.
We are.
There's only two things that you should have really honestly paid attention to, or else you were under a rock. There's Tiger King's and The Last Dance.
Oh, I saw The Last Dance.
If you didn't watch that – so Carol Baskin allegedly fed her husband to these tigers. Allegedly. Don't know if she did or she didn't. I don't – you know. Really don't care.
And now she's on Dancing with the Stars.
The only place in America that you could, you know, do that is only here.
At the top of the hour, Donald Trump weighs in on saving the college football season.
I can't believe this dude hadn't seen Tiger King.
What?
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.